This is Wednesday, October 26th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington, D.C. Coming up, as the election approaches, the U.S. candidates are targeting certain areas of the country for their last-minute campaigning. A controversial leader of the Philippines says this month's military drills with the U.S. will not be repeated.
This will be the last maneuver war games between the United States and the Philippines.
You'll hear more about that. And the U.S. does something it has never done before at the United Nations. We check in with VOA UN correspondent Margaret Bashir live at the UN about that. It's all on today's International Edition. As the November 8th election nears, Democrat Hillary Clinton and Republican Donald Trump are focused on a handful of so-called battleground states that will determine who will be the next president of the United States. The United States elects a president through the state-by-state accumulation of electoral college votes. The candidate who wins the popular vote in a given state is awarded that state's electoral votes. From Washington, VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has a look at the battle for swing states this year.
Donald J. Trump!
In the final days of the campaign, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump are frequent visitors to the same handful of states, whether it's Trump in Ohio and New Hampshire or Clinton in Florida and Nevada. For several years now, the United States has been sharply divided politically in presidential elections. Political expert Stephen Wayne.
In many states, one party has a very big lead, and there's no sense in spending a lot of resources at the presidential level in that state.
That leaves about a dozen so-called battleground or swing states where the presidential candidates spend most of their time, says expert Jeremy Mayer.
In the modern presidential campaign, you run campaigns only in about 12 states. The list can change from year to year, although in the last three election cycles, it's fairly stable.
The swing states that get the most attention include large states like Florida and Ohio, as well as smaller ones like North Carolina, Nevada, and New Hampshire. Since the 1992 election won by Bill Clinton, Democrats have generally had more success in winning key swing states. And that makes it challenging for Trump this year, says analyst Austin Hart.
He's got to win voters in Florida, Ohio, perhaps Colorado and Nevada. He's got to shore up things in Pennsylvania if he can. So he has a heavy load in front of him.
Folks, we're run by people that are not smart people.
In the final days of the campaign, candidates target a relatively small group of voters in a handful of states, says expert Jennifer Lawless.
The question is now that sliver of independence. But it's not only the sliver of independence, it's smaller than that. It's the sliver of independence who live in battleground states. So we're talking about a very, very small percentage of the population.
Polls show Clinton leading nationally and in several key battleground states, though Trump remains competitive in a few key states like Ohio, Florida, and North Carolina. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
Andrew Palshevsky, our social media guru, is with us, as he always is, on International Edition. What's trending as far as politics are concerned?
Well, to pick up where Jim left off, in the key state of Florida this morning, a poll from Bloomberg was trending that showed Donald Trump up by 2 points. And so a lot of Trump supporters saying, we have the momentum, we're going to win this, we're up by 2 points, we're only going to grow from here. Hillary Clinton supporters saying, well, it's not over yet, we're still fighting in Florida, and this is maybe an outlier. All the other polls have showed our candidate ahead. So you're seeing a lot of this kind of jockeying back and forth on social media as the election gets closer, as these polls come out for specific states, as the different things happen. You see both sides kind of jumping on them and reacting to them in the moment.
It's been very interesting because Donald Trump over the past few days, 4 or 5 days or so, has almost been positioning himself into a position of admitting that he was behind. Now let's see what happens as far as bravado is concerned by Mr. Trump, now that at least one of the polls shows him up by a couple of points.
Well, that's one of the favorite sayings I love, is that a week in politics is like a lifetime. So in the course of the next 2 weeks or 13 days that we have, we'll have to see two lifetimes or thereabouts and see how they go through him.
And what about the Walk of Fame in Hollywood?
Donald Trump, you know, he was in D.C. today to open his new hotel on Pennsylvania Avenue, but thousands of miles away in Hollywood, a man walked up to his star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame and took a sledgehammer and a pickaxe to it. So those images making the rounds on social media, the star is absolutely obliterated. I did see one photo, though, where somebody went and posted up a Trump bumper sticker on the star, so it looks like his name is back on the star, at least temporarily. But mystery as to who did this could be literally millions of people that would go out and probably do that, but a lot of reaction.
You know, whether you like the guy or don't like the guy as a candidate, whether you think he should be the president or not, that's probably not the thing you should
probably not
be doing.
The best way to go about it. Better to let your voice be heard in the voting booth rather than with a pickaxe on Rodeo Drive.
That's Andrew Palchesky. You do not have to spell his name to get in touch with him. What do you have to do?
Absolutely not. You can find me on Twitter at APAL, APAL.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Do appreciate it.
Absolutely.
We have a story just coming in from the United Nations in New York. The United States at the U.S. has abstained for the first time in 25 years on a U.N. resolution condemning America's economic embargo against Cuba. That's a measure that it's always vehemently opposed. Standing by at the United Nations live is Margaret Bashir, VOA's UN correspondent. Why has this happened, Margaret?
Well, we've seen that the normalization process of relations between the U.S. and Cuba over the past nearly 2 years now, and I think that the U.S. sees this as probably part of that process. So they abstained this year. They didn't block it. They didn't vote no, but they abstained. So it's, I would call it a slight but significant shift in their position.
So what happens next?
Well, it's really up to the U.S. Congress to lift the embargo. The U.S. President can't do it. You know, he's used his executive powers to make other changes on travel, air flights. Now you can bring cigars and rum back from Cuba into the United States, which you couldn't do before. So there have been changes at the executive level, but it's really up to the legislature, to the Congress, to make that change. And right now, with a Republican-dominated Congress, it doesn't appear it's going to happen.
So something might have to or would have to change for something really to go ahead as far as relations are concerned with between the U.S. and Cuba.
Well, at this point.
Margaret Bashir, reporting live from the United Nations. Margaret, as always, thanks so much.
Thank you.
This is International Edition. Among the stories happening in the world, one report says more than 10,000 Iraqis have been displaced since the start of an operation to retake the northern city of Mosul from Islamic State militants. Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump is staking his claim to a home on Washington's fabled Pennsylvania Avenue, cutting the ribbon to officially open his new luxury hotel. Authorities in Afghanistan say extremists linked to Islamic State have abducted and massacred at least 30 civilians in a remote central region. Large parts of the refugee camp known as the jungle near the French port city of Calais went up in flames Wednesday as migrants set fire to shelters before being forced to leave. And get a hold of this one. The planet orbiting the nearest star to Earth may be habitable. That according to NASA. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on the VOAnews.com website and on our VOA mobile apps. This is International Edition on VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
Health issues from asthma, lung cancer, and heart disease to reproductive and developmental disorders have long been linked to air pollution. A new study published in the European Heart Journal suggests that air pollution can also be connected to an increased prevalence of high blood pressure. The study followed over 41,000 people in five countries for 5 to 9 years and investigated the health effects of not only air pollution, but also traffic noise. The research indicates that one additional adult per 100 of the same age group who lived in the most polluted areas develops high blood pressure than those who live in less polluted areas. The study also shows that 6% of those who live on streets with an average nighttime noise level of 50 decibels or more had a higher risk of developing high blood pressure than those who live on streets with nighttime noise levels that were lower. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition. We continue now. Philippines President Rodrigo Duterte at the start of a three-day visit to Japan, took aim at the United States again Wednesday, suggesting that in the course of a 6-year term, he wants to see all foreign troops out of his country.
I have declared that I will pursue an independent foreign policy. I want, maybe in the next 2 years, my country freed of the presence of foreign military troops. I want them out. And if I have to revise or abrogate agreements, executive agreements, I will. This will be the last maneuver, war games between the United States and the Philippines, military.
Addressing an economic forum in Tokyo, he sought to assure his audience that last week's trip to China was about economics and not military matters. Now, Mr. Duterte, who took office June 30th, has criticized Washington for questioning his anti-drug campaign, insulted President Barack Obama, and announced last week in Beijing that Manila was separating from Washington. Such statements brought this reaction from U.S. State Department spokesman John Kirby.
We've seen these comments. They are at odds. Inexplicably at odds with this relationship that we continue to enjoy. And you've already seen cases where the president himself and even some of his cabinet officials have walked back some of these statements. So we're not going to react and respond to every bit of rhetoric. We're going to continue to work at this relationship. We're going to continue to meet our obligations under the defense treaty. We haven't seen any policy traction behind it. In other words, there hasn't been any change, tangible changes to the policies and to the programs that both our nations are implementing and executing on a daily basis.
And we are now told that a statement from the U.S. government says that the Philippines have not lodged any kind of formal request to stop the interaction between the two countries. Asian society analyst Stephen Rood in Manila told VOA's Victor Beatty that Mr. Duterte detests public criticism and is known for holding anti-American views and suggests that some real policy changes may be around the corner.
He has actually asked the defense secretary to talk to the cabinet next week about what are the advantages of the relationship with the United States, because as the defense secretary has said, President Duterte hasn't discussed any of this with him. And when he brought that up with the president said, okay, discuss this. Point number one, of course, it's the continuing expression of his anti-Americanism, which has been a longstanding attitude of his. But secondly, the relationship between what he says, for instance, the Enhanced Defense Cooperation Agreement, and the policy is not as certain as we would like.
So there is a possibility of some sort of policy change coming forward.
Well, there definitely is a possibility of that. He has definitely combined a very practical dollars and cents attitude towards China with his suspicion and distaste for the United States to cause a considerable rebalance. Now, the professionals in his cabinet are saying that he doesn't mean a separation. He just means more regional integration with ASEAN and Asia in general. So we'll see whether that continues. As a for instance, the Department of Finance is organizing, continues to organize a donors forum called the Philippine Development Forum to be held on November 8th and 9th. So certainly the bureaucracy continues to go forward as if there won't be a radical change, but having a determined president with as much power and popularity as he has certainly does raise the possibility that there will indeed be a change.
Is his cabinet and bureaucracy with him on this?
There are a number of different elements in it. When he was reaching out to the left, he appointed several from the left to his cabinet to social posts such as agrarian reform and education and labor and the like. So they have indeed applauded this distancing from the United States. On the other hand, he's got professional managers, the finance secretary, the budget secretary, the planning secretary, and the like, who are well aware of the economic importance of relations with the United States, who have tried to keep the lid on things.
Stephen Rood said a key player in this controversy will be the current defense minister and retired General Delfin Lorenzana, who has a long-standing relationship with Washington. He also said ties have occasionally been rocky, but on the whole, the two countries have been close. This is VOA.
On November 8th, American voters will choose their next president. We'll provide you with the latest updates. Will it be Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump? Will third-party candidates like Gary Johnson or Jill Stein have an impact on the final outcome? What does that mean for Americans and the world? It's all here on VOA.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
This is International Edition from the VOA in Washington, D.C. I'm Ira Melman. The director of U.S. National Intelligence says the ongoing push to persuade North Korea to give up its controversial nuclear program is, in his words, probably a lost cause. James Clapper delivered his assessment Tuesday in New York City during a forum at a nonpartisan independent research group, the Council on Foreign Relations. He said North Korea's leadership considers its nuclear arsenal as its ticket to survival.
They are under siege and they are very paranoid. So the notion of giving up their nuclear capability, whatever it is a non-starter with them. The best we could probably hope for is some sort of a cap, but they're not going to do that just because we ask them. There's going to have to be some significant inducement.
The United States and five other nations, including China, Russia, Japan, and South Korea, spent several years negotiating with North Korea over its nuclear program. The talks have been stalled since Pyongyang withdrew in 2009, 3 years after announcing its first nuclear test. Washington says resumption of the six-party talks would require the government of Kim Jong-un to commit once again to halting its nuclear test and scrapping its nuclear development program. As we continue, a massive merger in the U.S. cable, television, movie, and internet business is a symptom of large and rapid changes in that industry. Combining AT&T with Time Warner boosted stock markets, but a social media expert says making large companies even bigger could hurt the innovation. That is the key to survival. VOA's Jim Randall reports some other experts say the combined company might have problems getting government approval.
Home box office, which shows Game of Thrones and many other popular programs, is a cable television channel and part of Time Warner. The big company is the target of an $84 billion merger bid by AT&T, which is one of the biggest providers of internet and wireless communication and a conduit for television programming through its DirecTV service. The new company would unite a major program producer with a large company that distributes content. The proposal comes as cable television companies expect less revenue as customers turn to internet alternatives. An expert at the Silverback Social Media Agency says accelerating change in the media landscape makes innovation crucial to success and survival. Large lumbering companies are slow to innovate, according to Silverback's Chris Desi.
Three guys that are MIT educated or Stanford educated, they're in a basement somewhere, they're in Silicon Valley, they're going to do something so compelling that's going to definitively change everything that we're talking about in the entire media landscape.
On the stock market, skeptical investors pushed down the two companies' stock prices on worries that getting regulatory approval might be hard. But investors often see mergers as a sign of economic confidence, and the news sent overall stock markets up, according to the head of CFRA research, Sam Stovall.
Why would AT&T be doing this unless it feels as if there is some growth potential, at least expecting that the economy could be improving over the next several quarters?
CNN produces news programs seen in the United States and around the world, and is one of the companies affected by the merger of its parent firm, Time Warner. Critics say allowing the huge combined company to control so much news and entertainment media puts too much power in too few hands. A scholar at the University of Pennsylvania says mergers may also mean customers pay more and get less. Professor Victor Picard spoke via Skype.
One way or another, consumers get hit in their pocketbooks. They end up paying more on a regular basis. And many of the purported benefits that industry representatives claim will come out of these mergers often do not ever materialize, at least not to the extent that they promise.
HBO, home to many dramatic films, is one of the major properties in the merger. There may be a bit of drama in real life as regulators decide the fate of this merger. Some experts say it has a 50-50 chance of success. Jim Rattle, VOA News, Washington.
I don't know if you are old enough to remember the Afghan girl on the cover of National Geographic magazine, the famed Green Eye Afghan girl. That was back in 1984, so probably a lot of you do not remember that. However, a Pakistani investigator says police have arrested that woman, the National Geographic's famed green-eyed Afghan girl, for having a fake Pakistani identity card. The Federal Investigation Agency says police arrested Sharbat Gula during a raid on Wednesday at a home in Peshawar. Gula was an Afghan refugee girl when she gained international fame with that picture. That's going to wrap it up for us today. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Enjoy your day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
About 1 billion people, or every seventh person, suffers from at least one neglected tropical disease. Neglected tropical diseases, or NTDs, are chronic disabling illnesses that thrive in areas with poor sanitation, lack of clean drinking water, and scant access to medication. NTDs have blinded, disabled, disfigured, and killed their victims for centuries, devastating individuals and entire communities. They affect the ability of children to thrive and to learn, and of adults to work, thus perpetuating the cycle of poverty. Nonetheless, most of these diseases are frequently preventable or treatable, often with low-cost medications. So 10 years ago, working through the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, the United States government launched a public-private partnership to treat those who suffer from NTDs and to help prevent contamination and spread of the parasites that cause them through improved sanitation, preventive treatments, and mass drug distribution campaigns. Working in partnership with the United Kingdom's Department for International Development, the Conrad Hilton Foundation, the Queen Elizabeth Diamond Jubilee Trust, and many more, USAID has been instrumental in the delivery of more than 1.6 billion treatments to prevent and treat seven of the most common NTDs. Some 743 million people across 25 countries directly benefited from these treatments. Much of the medication was donated by pharmaceutical companies, which have given over $11 billion worth of drugs free of charge to the countries where USAID supports mass treatment campaigns. Moving forward, over the next 5 years, USAID and its partners plan to provide 1.3 billion treatments, leverage $6 billion in donated drugs, and prevent more than 585 million cases of NTDs. The partners hope to eliminate trachoma, the world's leading cause of preventable blindness. Lymphatic filariasis, a painful and disfiguring parasitic infection transmitted by mosquitoes. And to break the transmission of diseases like schistosomiasis by improving sanitation. Working together with our partners over the past 10 years, said USAID Administrator Gail Smith, we have figured out an approach that works, and freed over 100 million people from these parasitic worms and bacterial infections that have held communities back for too long. Now is the time to double down and reach scale.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.